And Ron, whenever you're ready.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 9th Biennial Florida Service Symposium of Narcotics Anonymous, our very first virtual symposium. I will be hosting the meeting tonight. Ezra and Michelle are our technical wizards that will be magically fixing things if they break. We hope the symposium has been an informative one for everyone who's been attending. Because of the virtual format, we have this unique opportunity to welcome attendees from sometimes various parts of the world and many parts of the United States and other countries. Because it's our first virtual symposium, the opportunity to make mistakes, hopefully everyone is going to overlook those. Tonight, our speaker meeting is, we have Arnie H.G. from Canada. We will be recording this meeting and make it available to you upon request, and we're going to work that out. I would like to remind everyone that we may have several translators at some point, or we may have people from outside the country. So if you can, talk slowly to give them an opportunity to either translate or understand what we're saying. If the readers and the speaker needs to be slowed down, we ask that you please use the radio buttons in the toolbar at the bottom of your screen, located in the reactions icon. That is a gray button pointing to the left that indicates go slower. We'll do our best to take note of this signal and ask the speaker to slow down. I have a few procedures for tonight's meeting to bring your attention. We ask that you turn your video on if possible. We'd like to see your faces. If you are smoking, eating, vaping, similarly distracted types of activity, please turn your video off to not distract to other attendees. All attendees except those reading tonight will be muted. If you have any technical questions, please chat to Ezra or Michelle, technology gurus. Let me give a bit about our history. We had our first Florida Service Symposium in 2005. And our symposium is held every other year, the last weekend of March. And we typically kick off the weekend with a Professionals Day. We invited professionals from many disciplines to include treatment providers. We've had medical professionals, law enforcement, corrections, government, and our judicial system, to name a few. And I'm grateful. I attended many of our workshops. They were well populated. We'd like to thank you for your continued support, and thank you for allowing me to be a part of your process tonight. I'm going to read our press statement. As our 11th tradition says, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. The primary purpose of our public relations effort is to tell the story of Narcotics Anonymous and what our program offers to the still suffering addict. We do not disclose our last names to the media as identifiable members of Narcotics Anonymous. If members of the press should approach any of you, please direct them to the chat, and press members, you can put your information in the chat to either Ezra or Michelle, and we will kindly get with you about that. Can you please help me open this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, wisdom to know the difference. Rose has agreed to do our first reading. who is an addict?
My name is Rose. I'm an addict. Who is an addict? Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know. Our whole life and thinking was centered in drugs in one form or another, the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or a woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grip of a continuing and progressive illness whose ends are always the same: jails, institutions, and death.
Thank you, Rose. Ramon has agreed to read, "What is the Narcotics Anonymous Program?"
You're unmuted, but we can't hear you, Ramon.
Ramon, are you using an attached microphone as opposed to your usual phone?
Ramon, I'll read for you this time, okay? I'm an addict. My name is not Ramon. My name is Ron, but I'm going to stand in for my friend Ramon tonight. What is the Narcotics Anonymous Program? NA is a nonprofit fellowship or society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. We are recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There's only one requirement for membership: the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA, but not affiliated. With any other organizations, we have no initiation fees or dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement groups, and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us, regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. Not interested in what or how much you've used or who your connections were, what you've done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean. Tomas K. has agreed to read the next reading, "Why Are We Here?"
Hi, Tomas K. Why are we here? Before coming to the Fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we had found it in drugs. We placed their use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibility, we were actually creating our own problem. We seem to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realized that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide. But addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion.
I agree.
And psychiatry. None of these methods was sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress until, in desperation, we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized we were sick people. We suffered from a disease from which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point, and recovery is possible.
Thank you so much, Tomas. Ana Luisa has agreed to read our words.
My name is Ana Luisa. I'm an addict from Portugal. How it works, if you want what we have to offer and are willing to make the effort to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. These are the principles that made our recovery possible. One, we admitted that we were powerless over our addiction, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, we humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, we continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscience contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to addicts and to practice these principles in all our affairs. This sounds like a big order, and we can't do it all at once. We didn't become addicted in one day, so remember, easy does it. There is one thing more than anything else that will defeat us in our recovery. This is an attitude of indifference or intolerance towards spiritual principles. Three of these are indispensable are honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. With this, we are well on our way. We feel that our approach to the disease of addiction is completely realistic, for the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. We feel that our way is practical, for one addict can best understand and help another addict. We believe that the sooner we face our problems within our society in everyday living, just that much faster we become acceptable, responsible, and productive members of that society. The only way to keep from returning to active addiction is not to take that first drug. If you are like us, you know that one is too many and a thousand never enough. We put great emphasis on this, for we know that when we use drugs in any form or substitute one for another, we release our addiction all over again. Thinking of alcohol as different from other drugs has caused a great many addicts to relapse. Before we came to NA, many of us viewed alcohol separately, but we cannot afford to be confused about this. Alcohol is a drug. We are people with a disease of addiction who must abstain from all drugs in order to recover. Thank you.
Thank you. And the group would like to thank everyone for reading. And I'm sorry, we have one more. Slow it down, Ron. We have Julie asked to read the 12 traditions.
I'm Julie, I'm an addict.
Oh, Julie.
We keep what we have only with vigilance. And just as freedom for the individual comes from the 12 steps, so freedom for the group springs from our traditions. As long as the ties that bind us together are stronger than those that would tear us apart, all will be well. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on NA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscious. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or NA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. Six, an NA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the NA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, or prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every NA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Narcotics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, NA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Narcotics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the NA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Understanding these traditions comes slowly over a period of time. We pick up information as we talk to members and visit various groups. It usually isn't until we get involved with service that somebody points out that personal recovery depends on NA unity, and that unity depends on how well we follow our traditions. The 12 traditions of NA are not negotiable. They are the guidelines that keep our fellowship alive and free. By following these guidelines in our dealings with others and society at large, we avoid many problems. That is not to say that our traditions eliminate all problems. We still have to face difficulties as they arise. Communication problems, differences of opinion, internal controversies, and trouble with individuals and groups outside the fellowship. However, when we apply these principles, we avoid some of the pitfalls. Many of our problems are like those that our predecessors had to face. Their hard-won experience gave birth to the traditions. And our own experience has shown that these principles are just as valid today as they were when these traditions were formulated. Our traditions protect us from the internal and external forces that could destroy us. They are truly the ties that bind us together. It is only through understanding and application that they work.
Thank you, Julie. And again, thanks everyone for reading tonight. Tonight's speaker is from Canada, and he's asked if I would introduce tonight, and I'm privileged to introduce tonight's speaker. I've known him for many years. I met him in a service capacity in Narcotics Anonymous, and since that time, I've been able to been in a position to observe him in his personal life and watch how he's navigated recovery and ways that he's carried the message and the way he lives his life. And it's been inspirational for me. Sometimes in your recovery, you would see people that are examples and you aren't sure at the time that you watch them do what they do, but you don't understand that at some point in your life, you're gonna really appreciate what you've learned from them and how you would apply it to your life. You know, I've watched Arnie do some impossible things in the fitness area. I paid attention to the way he took care of his body and ate. And that has benefited me and my recovery to a great extent in the last several years. He has a really, really great sense of humor. And he really works hard on behalf of Narcotics Anonymous. And I'll give you a quick story. A couple of weeks ago, I was doing some service work. And in doing so, I was communicating with people that I had not met before and in various parts of the world, in North America in particular. And I happened to ask this guy, and one of the questions I asked him was, what motivated you to be involved in Narcotics Anonymous and contribute the things that you've contributed lately in Narcotics Anonymous? And this guy was not a Canadian. He was from the United States. And you know how we do things without looking for recognition, but he called Arnie out and said, this is the person who inspired me and motivated me to do some of the things that I've done recently on behalf of Narcotics Anonymous. Fortunately for me, I've visited Arnie's home group since the pandemic, and I thank you for the invitation, Arnie. And we attend the meetings together at least 5 days a week now. And so I'm happy that you asked me to do this. And I give you Arnie HG from Toronto, Canada. Arnie? Let's give him a round of quiet applause, please. There he is.
Thank you. Thank you, Ron. My name's Arnie. I'm an addict. And thank you so much, Ron. I mean, with an introduction like that, I should just say, thank you. And that's it. We're done. And, you know, I thought this was like the usual Florida symposium. So I got dressed up. I enjoyed the banquet. It was wonderful. Great to see everybody in the hallways. And, you know, at least I can pretend like we're back to normal a little bit. And I'm serious. I got dressed up. I got to look. I'm going to stand up. Don't be shy. Yeah, I got the belt on. I got the pants on. I got everything. I'm not wearing like shorts, but I did. I got the fuzzy purple slippers on. So that's a little bit of a cheat. The Zoom is great. Thank you again, Ron. Thanks for the great introduction. Thank you, Christy Beth, for asking me to share. And thank you to the committee. Thank you, Tana, Jorge, and Steve. Thank you, guys. Always great to see you again and still working hard. And, you know, we were at this, well, Ron and I were here and Craig and Franny and a bunch of us in 2017. I was just looking back then when we were actually at a Florida symposium, when there was a Florida symposium. And it's kind of different to do it this way. And my hat's off to the committee. You guys have done a great job. I've been dropping in and out of workshops, and you've just done a fantastic job to put this together. These things don't put themselves together. It requires a lot of people spending a lot of time together, getting on each other's nerves for a very long time. Probably won't speak to each other for another month after this, but really doing a stellar job. It is just, it's great. And I love the pamphlet kind of idea with the room layout when you're choosing the rooms. It's wonderful. And the Zoom, of course, we all know is an unintended consequence of the pandemic, it's different. Somebody told me a month or so ago, they said, well, I don't like Zoom meetings. First of all, I said, if your dealer would only deliver drugs to you by Zoom, you'd never log off. And so, oh yeah, okay, you got a point there. And somebody else said, no, Zoom, those are lazy people's meetings. And my answer was, this lazy person has never been to as many meetings as he has now. I have never been to as many meetings, and not only meetings, you know, where I'm from, but meetings all over the world. And it's fantastic. I think it's great. It's obviously, the cows are out of the barn now, and I don't think we're going to be able to put some of them back. This is This is too good to be true. What else did I want to say? There was something else I wanted to say. And of course I forgot. I'm not an authority on anything. I have a lot of opinions, but that's kind of, I guess, what we share when we share a story. Christy Beth said, I asked, what am I supposed to talk about? She said, well, talk about your story and talk about service. Because this is kind of based on service. Obviously, these past few days with the workshops, it's all around service. And I said, okay. I mean, I am not the first choice here. Just so you know, I'm the stand-in here, and I am not the speaker that you initially had. He's far, far better than me. I'm not even worthy to introduce him. And, you know, I see a lot of familiar faces here that I've had the honor of serving with and meeting and sitting down and sharing food. And it's great to see everybody. But most of you out there, in fact, all of you out there would probably do a better job at this than I'm going to do. So today it's me. Tomorrow it's probably going to be you. And, you know, if Ron was talking about when we inspire people to be here and do what they do, if the goal of this symposium, if the goal of this event was to inspire people, and leadership, you know, isn't about leading, it's about inspiring new leaders. So if that's the goal, then, you know, I get a text from my friend Ryan here before the meeting started tonight, who's here for his first Florida symposium. Doesn't have to leave the comfort of his living room. And his text was, seriously, now I'm a full-blown service junkie. So you've done your job. You've done your job. There's another addict in the room. So maybe this year it's me. Next year, maybe Ryan will be sharing. But like I said, I'm not the first choice here. We wish Anthony a speedy recovery. I know he was quite ill, and he's bouncing back. And we wish him all the best. He's the hub of the wheel here. Ron mentioned that I'm from Canada. I am from Canada. I'm actually from the west coast of Canada. I'm from Vancouver, from Victoria. But I moved out to Toronto about 5 years ago. Now, currently, I'm in neither of those places. I'm in Portugal, and it's probably almost 1 o'clock in the morning. So if I fall asleep halfway through this, just ring the bell if I'm talking too fast. I'm over in Portugal. You know, when the temperature started to go down and COVID started to go up in Toronto, I got the hell out of there and came over with my beautiful girlfriend. Thank you, Ana Luisa. And here we are in Portugal. And being in Portugal is a lot like being, I was thinking about it, you know, when someone asks you to speak at an event or anywhere or at a meeting, you get your best ideas in the wee hours in the morning or the shower. And that's when you can't write them down. But I was thinking that, you know, being in Portugal it's a lot like coming to my first NA meeting. You know, I can't understand what everybody's saying. I have no idea what they're talking about. They all seem to be smiling. They all want to have a conversation. I can't read anything. I don't understand the language. It's very similar. So thanks to COVID, we get to spend more time just locked up here. But I'm sure when we get out, I'll try to learn something other than, you know, good morning, good night, good evening, which is better than if I was in active addiction, then I'd have to learn words like eight ball and half ounce and, you know, all that stuff. So I've come a long way. So if you're new here, and I know I looked at the list of participants, and I see there are regional delegates here, there are ADs here, there are regional secretaries here, area people here. I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir when I talk about service, and And events like these really allow me to go to and listen and to rub shoulders with the giants like Ron, who introduced me, like Craig, like, you know, I know I'll leave somebody out, but there are a lot of giants in this program who have a lot of information to share. And when I was asked to speak, somebody asked me, well, are you going to? And I said, you know, you've got a program that A, saved your life. B, because of the service that you've been honored to participate in. This is a program that's invested a tremendous amount of energy into your experience. If you're sharing experience, strength, and hope, this is a fellowship that's invested a lot of energy, time, and money into your experience. It would be nothing short of disrespectful to say no to anyone for any reason at any time. So I'm honored that someone would think it that I have anything to share, but that remains to be seen. If you're new here and you're looking around, you're probably looking at these pictures, these little squares. I know some of them aren't live. Some of the people put up a little picture of themselves, which really doesn't look anything like the person a lot of times. You know, they'll put up some picture. It doesn't look like them at all. But there are a lot of pictures you'll see here, a lot of people, you know, sitting in there. My own sponsee who said, you know, I used to go to meetings and I loved Zoom because I used to go to meetings and I could judge people at meetings by the way they talked and by the way they looked. But now with Zoom, I can judge them by the way they decorate their living room. So if you're new here and you're looking around, you probably see a lot of people, maybe including me, who you think that that person has never been an addict. That person has never done what I've done. That person has never been in the situation and the pain that I'm experiencing. But if I may speak for everybody in this meeting, we have. We've all been there. And I guess it's going to be okay. And knowing that with this amount of people in a Zoom meeting, someone here is experiencing some pain. Someone here is going through a tough time. And I've always found that those were when I relied on this program most. Those are when I relied on my step work most, because that's what it's for. You know, this is like a military operation where we practice, and like good soldiers, we drill and we march and we practice and we drill and we march and we prepare for a battle that we hope will never come. And then boom, there it is. And I found out what the steps are for, what my sponsor is actually for, what service is for. Service is really a rope that ties me to this program. When I, okay, so I'm an addict. I was the last person to know. We usually are, I guess. Everybody else knew. My boss knew. My family knew. My ex-wife knew. My first ex-wife knew. I know you're going to go there. But I didn't. You know, I didn't plan on that. I grew up in Victoria, British Columbia. It's a little island off of the west coast of Canada. And I was an only child. My family was well off. I went to boarding schools. I was going to say all my life, but clearly that's not the case. I went to boarding school, all private schools. And the first time I went to a school that had any girls in it, I was 18 or 19, and then the wheels fell off. So I'm not saying that to be different. I'm saying that to demonstrate that we all come here from different places. And sometimes people need to hear something that resonates with them, especially to begin with, because at my first meeting, all I heard was, first of all, there were a lot of tattoos. I think there was a person with a bone through his nose. And there were, all I heard was blah, 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 pawn shop, blah, 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 sex, blah, 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 jail. You know, there are just a few things that I understood. And when I grew up, like I said, I was an only child. I was spoiled. And I grew up with manicured lawns and going down to Palm Beach at Easter and with the lieutenant governor over at our place. My dad owned a hotel and the largest beer parlor drinking establishment in the province. And his business was alcohol. His religion was alcohol, and we worshiped regularly. So, you know, the whole house kind of revolved around that, to the point where my dad had two plaques that were hand carved, and they hung up in the kitchen. And one of them said, living well is the best revenge. And the other one said, don't drink and drive, you might spill it. So this is my DNA. This is the pool that I came from. Because, you know, back then drinking was, you know, was a sport. It was cocktail parties. It was cars lined up on down the street, and everybody eventually falling on their faces. And I could hardly wait. And then, you know, the 60s came, and you listened to, you know, you watched the Rolling Stones or the Beatles or Ginger Baker. And I'm thinking, geez, I can hardly wait till I get old enough to try speed. You know, it looks like fun. But I ended up getting high at 13. That seems to be, I don't know why, that's just like a magic age for everybody. 13, I hear everybody else share about it. 13, it was 13 for me. And there was no going back. I hear people say that, you know, something was missing out of my life. And I don't think anything was missing out of my life. I didn't know anything was missing until I got loaded. And then I knew what was missing. This was clearly a piece of the puzzle that I had, that apparently not everyone had. And I wanted to share the message as quickly as possible with my friends. And you know what happens, you know, we get high, you go on and on and on, and you cross lines you say you'd never cross. And I did drugs. I promised that I would never do. I did drugs in a way that I promised that I would never do. I did things to get drugs that I promised that I would never do. And I ended up at, with that, what we call a moment of clarity. It wasn't for lack of trying. I tried to do it on my own. I tried to get a counselor. I was up with an evangelist. I lived in Los Angeles for the last 10 years of my addiction. And I highly recommend it. If you want to hit a bottom, LA is a wonderful place to hit a bottom. I had a great time. I remember staying up until the wee hours of the morning. And even when the evangelist was on TV, I'd have my hands on the screen and we would pray together, and tears are streaming down my face, and nothing, you know, right back at it. And, you know, I tried to do a number of different things in Los Angeles. I figured if I got the right job, the right car, the right place to live, everything would be great. I had a place down by the beach. I had my BMW. I had a great job with this well-known entity. And it didn't work. It didn't work for me. You hear people talk about this disease that just is incessant and just never stops talking. And I just couldn't stop. I mean, I don't know how many times I would take my stuff that I used with and I would throw it into the garbage and say, I am not doing this again. I'm done with this. I'm done. Do you hear me? And I would throw it into the dumpster. And the next morning I would be digging out the dumpster. What a stupid idea that was, trying to go at it again and again and again. So I fell through the cracks there. I tried to get into, I didn't try, I was in a band in Los Angeles. We played this place, the Whiskey and the Roxy and a few other places. The band wanted to get me drug tested. Now, if you're playing in a band in Los Angeles and they want to get you drug tested, that's not a good sign. So I didn't last long with them, and I don't know how many amends I can make to them for wasting their time, which is what I did to a lot of people. I ended up at work one day, and the reason why I got here is really, it's a fortune cookie. I got here because of a fortune cookie. And just to make a long story longer, I was working at this film studio in Los Angeles, and I was the representative there hated me. I hated my boss hated me. I hated him. And we had I was going downhill quickly. I went home. I was at Manhattan Beach Pier, had a Chinese restaurant overlooking the pier. And with the last little bit of money I had, I got into the Chinese restaurant, had some chow mein or something. And I remember looking out at the sun going down over the pier. And I remember REM was being played over the loudspeakers. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I thought, well, isn't that lovely? I got no money. I can't stop using. Everything is sliding between my fingers. I can't pay rent. I can't pay electricity. I'm probably going to lose my job. And so, fine, I finish a stupid chow mein. I get a fortune cookie. I open up the fortune cookie. And just for giggles, I figured I might as well read it. I open it up. It says, you have to wait for autumn for your luck to change. You have to wait for autumn for your luck to change. I grabbed the waiter and said, what kind of depressing fortune cookie is that? What? This is ridiculous. Like, you get fortune cookies, they say, you're going to have happiness and bliss. And I get, you've got to wait for autumn for your luck to change. First of all, autumn just went by and I'm not waiting a whole year. And I'm pissed at the waiter. I yell at him. I put the fortune cookie away and I head home. And at that point, I felt that everything was going sideways. Everything was clearly not going according to Arnie's plan. And I went back to work. 2 days later, I'm at work and the phone rings. And this lady called up. She said, I want to scout your property for a private party. I said, great. Fantastic. When do you want to come in? I want to come in Friday, 1 o'clock. Fantastic. What's your name? Her name was Autumn. Her name was Autumn. That's not normal. That's not a normal name. I had to stop. I said, wait a minute. Your name is Autumn? And I told her all about it. And I'm expecting her to be beautiful and sweep me off my feet and have lots of money. And she was none of that, but that's okay. She came on Friday. I showed her the property. I said, my luck is going to change. I told my boss, he said, you can't book off. I am booking off. My luck is going to change. See ya. I went home and went back to my place. I think all I had in the fridge was baking soda and some something to drink. I drank everything I could. I got arrogant and put on my white silk dinner jacket and my Frank Sinatra bow tie undone and started listening to stupid music and got the got what I could for my, you know, the equipment for my drug of choice, put it in my pocket. I went up to the local bar and I got hammered. And because I thought I'd just blend in with the crowd, have a little chin wag. And sometimes when that happens, you know, you've gone too far. You know, you remember thinking, I better not do anymore because I've got to see my dealer. So I kind of hobbled home. I got in my car. I put the booze between my legs. I put the pipe in my pocket. I covered up one eye and I headed out on the road. And just under LAX, I tagged a traffic cone and the officers pulled me over. And they pulled me over and they asked me to touch my nose. And I told them, if you'd be kind enough to point out exactly where my nose is, I'd be happy to touch it. So I got arrested and then, you know, spent the night in jail and they let me out. And I had to pay a fine. I had to do all this stuff. I had to go to these stupid drug courses. And eventually I got fired from my job. And I ended up going home and burning my severance check. I didn't have anything left except for a BMW. I tried to don't try to take a BMW to a pawn shop. I did. They just laughed at me. But my dealer was kind enough to take it off my hands and that was gone. And everything was gone. And there's the moment of clarity. I'm realizing that, you know, I'm 35 years old. I got to call my mother and admit to her that I'm a drug addict. And she said, great, you're coming up here. You're going to treatment. I'm not saying that treatment is great for everyone. I thought it was wonderful, but it's not part of our program. But I said, at that point, I said, great, I'll do whatever you want. Whatever, I'll do anything. And so we hung up the phone, and I told my lawyer that I was going to, I told my lawyer I was going back to Canada. And my lawyer said, you can't do that. You haven't finished your sentence. I told her, I've been to jail. I paid the fine. I've done the drug courses. I'm going to Canada. And she said, you have to go to these 12-step meetings. You've got to go, like, I think it was a dozen of them. And I asked her if I could exchange that for more jail. And she said, no, 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 you got to go. So I'm not here because I wanted to be here. I'm not here because I thought it was a good idea. I'm not here because I ever thought it would work. As a matter of fact, when I came to my first meeting to get that yellow piece of paper signed in the Valley in Los Angeles, it was just to observe and endure. Just sit through the meeting. Let's get this piece of paper signed and get me the hell out of here. Because I know what fun is. Fun is spending all my money, locking myself in a closet, inspecting the rug for 3 days, and, you know, peeking out through the Venetian blinds. That's fun. So don't tell me that this is going to be fun. And a fellow met me at the door of the meeting. And we all have that person. We all have that first person that we ever ran into, that first person that gave us a hug, that first person that said hello. And this guy met me at the door and he gave me his card and I went to that meeting and it changed my life. It changed my life. The first meeting changed my life. I was never the same since. I didn't stay clean. I went back to the crack house I was staying in and I told them, hey, you won't believe where I've been. It didn't go over very well. I stayed clean for about 15 minutes. But the problem is, you can't, when you see the truth, you can't unsee the truth. And I saw the truth at that meeting, at that first meeting. I saw what I didn't want to see. I heard what I didn't want to hear. I felt what I didn't want to feel. And I saw that there were people who were just like me because I heard your stories. And you were clean and you were happy. And that's what I wanted. And it changed my life. And I came up to Canada and I went into treatment and I thought that alcohol was a liquid and not a drug. I thought it was a beverage. And, you know, we went around and around on that for a bit. And eventually I got clean. As a matter of fact, on this very day, a number of years ago, were my last days using. My clean date is around the corner on April 4th. When I got to my first meeting in Vancouver, after I got out of treatment, because you had to be clean for 30 days to go through treatment. I got out of treatment and I got to the meeting early to set up chairs. And I got there to set up chairs because, and it wasn't because I wanted to do service. It was because I wanted to sit at the back of the room behind the roof support so nobody would ask me to share. And I would get there early at every meeting and I set up chairs and somebody noticed that. And they said, Arnie, why don't you come to the business meeting. I didn't know what the business meeting was. And I went to the business meeting and they said, I want to nominate Arnie to, Arnie's going to be the chair setter upper. So that was my, my first opportunity to shine. And I set up the chairs and I was responsible. Now I couldn't miss. It was a meeting every day. It was the nooner. And if you can stay clean in the nooner, you can stay clean anywhere. I don't care where the nooner is. The nooner is always populated by an interesting demographic. So I went to the nooner and I set up chairs every single day. And I got to be involved in service. Someone said it was natural for me. It was natural to participate. But believe me, I'm not an outgoing person. I'm a big introvert. And when the secretary didn't show up, we had a secretary that there was something the matter with him. He would have all the readings and he wouldn't even hand them out to anybody. He'd do all the readings himself. Well, one day he was sick and they said, Arnie, we want you to be secretary. And I got to be, you may have noticed that I'm the secretary. And from then on, I was a secretary and it was really something. And, you know, I couldn't wait for people to ask me, what's your position? I'm the secretary. You know, it was big. And then I made the mistake of, when my sponsor asked me, what are you doing on Wednesday night? I made the mistake of saying nothing. He said, great. Well, you're coming with me. We're going to go into a treatment center. We're going to do H and I. I said, what's H and I? He said, you just come with me and I'll show you. And my sponsor was, I said, are those things that I saw when I was in there? He said, yeah. And we went in. I went into the treatment center that I went through and with my sponsor. And I'll tell you what, you get exposed. There is nothing, there is no drug that's as highly addictive as HNI. I'm sorry, there is no drug that's as highly addictive as HNI. If you haven't done HNI yet, I am warning you, and that's including you, Ron Miller. If you haven't done HNI yet, I'm warning you, you'll never go back. And I started doing that, and I became a panel leader. You know, anything, any service position that's got the name leader in it, I'm in. So panel leader, I got to be a panel leader. And then eventually the chair said that he could no longer be chair of the area HNI, and nobody put up their hands. You know, is there anybody who wants to step in? And nobody put up their hands. And I didn't have the clean time, but I put up my hand. I said, look, I'll do it. If somebody's got to do it, I'll do it. And I did it. And it was wonderful. It was, we had a crew, you know, we had a posse. We had people that were dedicated to HNI. We all wore black, you know, we all rolled into the room together. It was wonderful, like the good old days. And then eventually I became the vice chair for regional HNI and then the chair for regional HNI. And after a while, the region asked if I would run for regional delegate, which I wasn't sure what that was. And I ran and was elected as a regional delegate. And that was my first exposure to coming to World Services. Actually, my first exposure was the first worldwide workshop that was held in Vancouver, British Columbia. And we originally had our own event. It was going to be a multi-regional event. And when we sent in a request, as you do to World Services, to say, can you send some board members? Because we'd like to have some speakers and have some workshops. They offered to take over the whole event, which I had to explain to people was a good idea. But it turned out to be an unbelievable event for everyone that attended. And it changed me. And then with the opportunity to go to a World Service conference, and I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but for people who have never been there before, to walk into that room, for me to sit down on the, you know, in those chairs and look up at the screen and see the people that are waiting to speak and see Spain, Germany, Australia, Peru. And I'm, where, somebody pinched me. Where am I? Like this, it was incredible. And to sit there and go out for meals with people and just sit around and talk about what's going on in recovery in your country. It was fascinating. It was mind blowing. When my term ended up coming to an end, I remember talking to some other RDs that, you know, we should have a pamphlet that says, is there life after an RD? Like what kind of life is there after an RD? Because it seems like I knew what the other ones had done. They dropped off the map. So someone nominated me for the board and then a regional nomination for the board. And I was nominated for the board. And at the conference where they read the election results, I remember, you know, all my buddies and I, we went out to lunch, all the RDs, we sat there, we had a good time. And I think this is important for the current board and for the past board. You know, we have these, I think Jeff was talking about before, how do we get rid of all this misinformation? How do we get rid of all this talk that's going on about us and them? Not realizing that it's all us. There is no them, you know? And when I was sitting there with my buddies, and I think that we create that somewhat, because after the election, and they announced the results of the election, and I got elected to the board, everything changed. And it wasn't, I could feel it. I wasn't invited out to the lunches that I was before. It was different. It was different. And that made me really sad. And, you know, the first conference after that was really sad because it wasn't the same. I think we've gotten back to a lot more of the camaraderie of everyone really understanding, especially with COVID, how we need to work together, how we need to, you know, have all our oars in the water, so to speak. So I'm just saying that because, you know, we've got enough to worry about. We've got, you know, we've got one enemy and it's addiction. It's not each other, but sometimes we end up going crazy at each other. I was just at an inventory for my home group before this, and we had a bunch of people with different opinions, and some people are crying, and you know how inventories go with home groups, everybody cries. And I remember saying that, you know, everybody's gonna have a different opinion. That's okay. Our second tradition says we are strong-willed people who are thrust together. Now the word thrust means it's not a good fit. It means that there are going to be issues. And I said that if we all talked with the same voice, if we all had the same opinion, that would indicate to me that something was wrong. The fact that we disagree in some areas is healthy. It allows us to hear other opinions. It allows us to hear from people that we would normally, if I was using, I'd just, you know, I would tune them out. So, but I'm supposed to talk about service, and I've got 4 minutes to finish talking about service. I didn't want to leave it till the end. I think that, you know, as an example of service, we've got some people who are no longer with us. As an example of service, I'm thinking of your past World Board Chair. Here's an example of service. Someone who has a disease that's taking their life, and they know it. And time is essential. And she gives her time to the fellowship that saved her life right up until the day she died. Doing a webinar, a conference participant webinar the day before she died, doing service right till the end. Is that a way to go out or what? I mean, that is, you know, that's giving everything. And Tali was a wonderful human being, a dedicated, driven, motivational member of this program. And you know, she's an example for everybody. I think that, you know, when we do service, why do we do it? It's like we're in a lifeboat, and you know, we get into the lifeboat, and then our job is to help other people into the lifeboat. If some of them want to sit there and tread water for longer, let them go. But we've got lots of jobs to do in the lifeboat, and somebody's got to do it. You know, we can look around and think, well, somebody will do it. Somebody else will do it. Well, sometimes nobody else will do it. I know that in Iran, we had talked about, if you want a service position in Iran, you have to line up behind 10 or 20 people. If not more than that, you have to prove that you're capable of doing that service position. And why do you want that service position? But here, you know, and I'm talking about North America in general and Canada included, we get somewhat complacent over that. So all I know is that service is on the medallion. Service is part of recovery. Service is part of the equation that adds up to recovery. 1 + 2 + 3 = 6. Home group plus sponsor plus working the steps plus doing service plus eating properly, sleeping properly, getting exercise plus step group equals recovery. If I take out one of those, it doesn't equal 6 anymore. It doesn't equal recovery. And service is part of that. I don't sponsor anyone who doesn't have an elected service position. Anyone who I sponsor, if they don't have it, I don't care if they've got 20 years or 20 days, find another sponsor, because that's, I don't know any other way to stay clean. So I'll close with this. And most people say I'll close with this and talk for another hour, but I'll close with this. You know, if you're new here, and there may be somebody new here, I know we've got a lot of service people. Welcome to the most expensive club in the world. And if you can get to a meeting, we are currently offering dispensing free vaccinations to protect you against addiction. You can be vaccinated against addiction. It will protect you from all the variants that addiction has to offer. You just have to go in and be vaccinated regularly, and you'll be protected. And it's free. It doesn't cost anything. So the one last thing about service is, if you're doing service, if you're facilitating service, if you're a driving force behind service, for God's sake, make it fun. Make it fun. Don't get stuck with Robert's rules, or, you know, we say that, you know, our but trusted servants, you know, and yet we end up falling into this, this governing just because of our own idea to act like grownups or something. I don't know what it is, but for God's sake, make it fun, because that's inspiring. That keeps people involved. So I've been known to talk long enough that the newcomer gets another day clean. I see that it's 9 p.m. where you are. It's probably 4 in the morning here. I am done talking. Thank you so much. And thank you for all the service that everyone here does. I know you're all involved. And thank you for what you do for Narcotics Anonymous. Thank you.
Let's give him a round of applause. Come on, give it up. Give it up for Arnie. Wonderful, 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 wonderful. Thank you so much for carrying the message at 9th Biennial Florida Symposium. Before we go any further, I'd like to extend some thank yous to the Arnies and the Stephanies and the Ernestes and the Liz's and the Collins and the Ezra's and the Michelle's and the Joes and the Christy Beths and all of those people that I witnessed, Mark, who helped put this thing together. Thank you, World Board, Tana, Jorge, Steve, for the workshops, the input. Thank you to the Rays of the Fellowship, who the admin committee, who came together and helped put this thing together. Thank you to the RCMs. Thank you for the people, the Ana Luisas from Portugal, who came and made a difference in this experience. And that's what this symposium is. You know, I attended a workshop today on a subject that I've been actively involved in. You know, that SP that we do on predatory behavior. And I can remember reading in the local resources the material that the Florida region had put in there many years ago about predatory behavior. It's in the workshop section. I attended a workshop today on that same topic, and I grew exponentially because it was about predatory behavior in a virtual platform. And it just was so much information. And what happens is, symposium is designed for a cutting edge training education that can't be found elsewhere. And I found it here in the last few days. And I want to personally thank all you trusted service. And it goes beyond the names that I call Sherry, V, you know, I just look around this Hollywood Squares and see the Craigs and all those people who participated in the last few days, Ernest, and I've enjoyed working alongside you all. And this is my moment to say thank you and for the experience. It takes a lot of work to put one of these things together and to get be concluded with someone like Arnie, who shares the passion, who has the wit, who has the humor, but who can also say that from my experience, you know, there's a free vaccination here. And we've been able to do this in the most creative way, and it's been talked about, you know, we have an epidemic in the midst of a pandemic, and we can come together unexpectedly in the midst of that, be creative, and continue the symposium on a virtual platform. We can get Steve up at 6 o'clock in the morning. Well, we got him up at 5 a.m. this morning to attend a 9 o'clock workshop, and he showed up. Now, 9 o'clock in California is 6 a.m. When was the last time you got ready and was present for a service commitment at 6 o'clock in the morning? And he smiled as he was doing this thing and stuff, you know, and I don't think it was a fake smile because I know what he's getting out of this process. So I just want to say a thank you and Arnie, you really, 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 really carried the message. And so with that, before we launch into the closing speakers, I would like to defer to our ADRD team to see whether there's any announcements or information, or even to our IT team to see whether there's any announcements or any information we'd like to cover. I'd like to extend a welcome to everyone in these Hollywood squares, because tomorrow the Florida Regional Service Conference takes place. And you're all welcome to that forum. You know, if you look at the actual invitation or the actual schedule, that's part of our process this weekend. And if you haven't attended our RRC, welcome and see how this culminates. Well, again, I'd like to defer to our delegate team and to our admin team to see whether there are any announcements regarding this event before I move any further into our readings.
Beth?
Yeah.
Ezra has his hand up.
Thank you, Ezra.
My name is Ezra. I'm an addict. I want to thank Ron and Arnie for a great meeting tonight, Christy, Beth, and Joel for an amazing weekend. A very special thank you to Michelle and Colin, who have really helped make this weekend run so smooth, and I could not do it without them, and I'm very, very grateful to them. For everybody here in attendance, hopefully everybody here has registered at naflorida.org/FSS. If you haven't, you can still register through the end of the night. And when you do that, you'll submit an email address. We are trying to get the recordings out ideally tomorrow. So that will be posted online. It should be available at naflorida.org/FSS as well, but you will also receive an email once that's been posted on the off chance that it doesn't happen tomorrow and it happens later in the week. But also in general, we just like to capture some, you know, the number of people that showed up and maybe put you guys on a mailing list or whatever the secretary team does with those registrations. So just a reminder to please fill that out. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Liz B has her hand up.
Go ahead, Liz. Will you unmute her? Give us a second, Liz. We're going to unmute you. There you are.
I'm Liz. I'm an addict, but I didn't.
You hope the mark.
I did not have anything. I did not have anything to say, that my hand was up clapping for the team. Sorry. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, while we're waiting for the next announcement, I want you all to remember too that we have a scheduled event in May. And it's a fun FUN raiser for our regional convention. It's called FRECNA. And FRECNA's scheduled for the 4th of July weekend. We're planning for that. And you know, we're planning for that with hope. We're planning for that with purpose. We have no idea where COVID is and this pandemic is going to take us, but we're planning for that. And it's on our website where you can actually make a reservation for your hotel and plan on attending and helping us celebrate. I feel hope on the horizon. I think that this thing might be culminating into a place where we can have a convention. So we're cordially inviting you to participate and come help us celebrate recovery this 4th of July here in Florida. So I thought I'd make that announcement. Are there any other announcements, you know, before we start our reading?
Michelle, put all of the links to those things that you mentioned in the chat, Ron.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. All right. Well, with that said, I'm going to ask Deb L. if she will read just for today. Deb, are you with us?
Is this screen sharing?
Can you hear?
She looks like she's unmuted.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yep.
It's my computer, sorry. It does this. Thank you. I'm Debbie, I'm an addict.
Hello, Debbie.
Just for today, tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using, and who have found a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear.
Thank you, Deb. Vernon has volunteered to read We Do Recover.
Good afternoon, Vernon. When at the end of the road, we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative, either go on as best we can to the better end, the institution more death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
Thank you, Brandon. And I am going to request that Craig R. from Annapolis, Maryland, close us out. Will you do that for us tonight, Craig?
You're unmuted, Craig.
Thanks, Ron. Sure. I'm an addict named Craig. Can we have a moment of silence for the addicts in and out of the program, followed by a third step prayer or a prayer of your choice in silence or no prayer at all? Many of us have said, take my will
in my life.
Guide me in my recovery.
And show me how to live
clean just for today.
All right, Denise, Lara, all these people. Thank you all. It was really good. And Karen, I see all of that. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.